May God's grace and peace be with you this day. Good morning, St. Luke's. It's good to be back. It's good to be here. We are continuing on in our series this morning, going through the story, this narrative of Scripture that we've been reading and seeing God's story kind of unveil before us, and we'll be diving into chapter 6 together. For those of you who or maybe are new today, or maybe you just forgot my name because I haven't been here for a couple weeks, I'm Pastor Aaron, and I'm excited to be here with you, to be here and serve here at St. Luke's as pastor, and I'm excited to spend time with you in God's Word. If you have your story book, whip it out. We're gonna be going through it a little bit. If you don't have one or you're new and you never got one, it's okay. We have them in the pew in front of you, so go ahead and grab one and follow along. We'll be walking through this together a little bit. And over the last couple weeks, we've been walking through it, and we started at creation. And we saw that life's good. You know, God's creation is good and perfect. And then we went from that to the utter fall of mankind. And then God makes this promise, a promise that he's going to fix this problem. He's going to send someone to redeem the world and to redeem us. And then we kind of change gears and we turn and follow this family of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And God makes some promises to them too. He says, I'm going to fulfill my promises to you through your family. I've chosen your family, and your family will become a great nation. And so we do. We follow Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jacob's name gets changed to Israel, and we follow his family, the family of Israel. So when we talk about the people of Israel, the Israelites, those are the descendants of Israel. And so we follow him and his sons down to Egypt. His son Joseph becomes right-hand man to Pharaoh. Life's good. There's a famine. They got food. Joseph dies. Life's not so good anymore. And the people of Israel become slaves in Egypt. Cue the entrance of Moses. Moses comes in and says, hey, let my people go. And then God comes and miraculously saves his people Israel out of the land of Egypt, and they make their way towards Mount Sinai. And that's where we were last week. Pastor Dan talked to us about the people of Israel being at Mount Sinai, making this covenant with God, and we asked that question, who is the God of Israel? And while they may lead us to doubt this at times, Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, is the God of Israel. And we talked about that this means that they should expect all good from him. That's the definition we got of what it means to have a God last week. And that's a definition that Martin Luther gave us. And I think it's just worth repeating because it's so true. What it means to have a God is your God is that which from which you expect all good things, and in which you seek refuge from all distress. That's your God. That which you expect all good, and in which you seek refuge from all distress. And I think that's important for us to keep in mind as we look at the people of Israel in chapter 6, as they wander through the wilderness and wander through the desert. Is Yahweh their God? And so we open up our books to chapter 6. It starts on page 71, so go ahead and open it up with me. And as we do, we start right where we left off in Sinai. And so we have the people of Israel, they're at Mount Sinai, and it says right at the very beginning that they set out from the desert of Sinai and they go up to the desert of Paran. And I don't know if you guys are geography buffs, but they're kind of heading north, okay? So they're starting down in south in Egypt and kind of heading up the peninsula towards the land of Canaan, this promised land. And they come to the desert of Paran. And so desert of Sinai, desert of Paran, I was kind of making note of that. I was like, I like that they use the word desert. It's good that they do that. If you've read through this in maybe another translation, you might have seen wilderness. Wilderness, desert, they're kind of used interchangeably. The word there in Hebrew is midbar. And really, that word just is used to describe kind of the landscape of like inland of present-day Israel. Let me tell you, when you're talking about the wilderness in Israel, talking about a desert, okay? It's a desert, I trust you. I have a picture, I don't know if we can pull it up. This is what it looks like, okay? So this is actually the wilderness of Zin, the desert of Zin. And I took this picture this summer when I was there in Israel. This is the kind of landscape the people of Israel are wandering through. It looks a lot like this. It's hot, it's dry, and there's not much there. You might find a little spring or a little brook and stream here and there with a few brushes, but there's not a lot of resources here, okay? And just a side note, like, I know I'm not a very good photographer, but this is like a real place. You know, it's so easy for us when we read the Bible or we're reading through the story, we see these names and we see these places, and it's so easy to just read over them. Like, that's a real place. A real place where the real people of Israel walked and where Moses walked, and that's so cool. We're talking about a real place, real people, and a real story. This is their story, and it's our story too. Anyways, that's just a side note. But just so you know, this is what the desert looks like. This is what the wilderness looks like. This is what they're wandering through. They're not like wandering through crazy brush and trees and stuff. It's desert, okay? So they're in the desert. They're wandering. And we're going to turn to page 72. This is what the people of Israel say right at the beginning of the chapter. We're going to look at the first full paragraph on page 72. Starts with the rabble. The rabble with them began to crave other food. And again, the Israelites started wailing and said, "If only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish that we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. But now we've lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna." Right here, beginning of chapter 6, we see some complaining. And it's interesting to me as the people of Israel come out of Egypt, and even when we go back to chapter 4, they're dealing with like a pretty crazy place. There's not a lot of resources. So God is providing for them their daily bread. Literally. Like manna is like bread. He's like literally sending bread down from heaven for them. And he's giving them food to eat. In chapter 4, he sends them quail to eat too. So they have food that they gather every day to eat. God is providing for them water to drink. There's several stories of God providing water for them to drink. So God is providing them daily bread each and every day. And they are complaining. And right here at the beginning of chapter 6, we see the beginning of a cycle that we'll see through chapter 6. As the people of Israel wander, there is this cycle that begins with them complaining. The people complain to Moses. They complain about God. And we have this refrain. It's the same refrain. Every time they start complaining, they say, "Hey, you know what was really good? When we were back in Egypt. You know, like when we were slaves? That was awesome. We should go back there. It was so great. You remember when like Pharaoh was killing all our children and we were slaves? It was the best." There's this refrain over and over again of the people of Israel wanting to go back to Egypt. These people who just two chapters before are crying out in anguish. These people who are perishing in Egypt. And God comes and saves them and rescues them out of the land of Egypt. And he does so in this crazy, powerful, miraculous way. He sends all these plagues through the Egyptians so that the Egyptians and the people of Israel know who God is. And he is powerful. And despite all of that, the people of Israel think, that sounds much better than where we're at right now. I don't know if many of you are parents and maybe can identify with the emotions of a young child throwing a temper tantrum and throwing down that perfectly good sandwich you just made for them. That's pretty much what's going on here with God. And so the second part of this cycle is God responds with anger. He's providing for them. The people are complaining. They want to go back to Egypt. And he's like, "I just got you out of there. Trust in me, trust in my provision," and he's angry. And so we have on page 73, God, I think God kind of has a sense of humor. You know, the people cry out for meat, and so God says, "Oh, you want some meat? okay, I'll give you some meat. And so God just throws all this meat at them, and they eat meat until they can't eat meat anymore, and they never want to see meat ever again. So they continue on in their way, and they wander some more. And on page 74, the people of Israel finally come to where this is supposed to be the end of the journey. Page 74, they come right onto the doorstep of the land of Canaan. This is the land that they're supposed to go to. This is the promised land. This is where they're headed. They're, you know, right at the doorstep. God says, okay, Moses, this is your chance. We're going to do this. Send some scouts in there. We're going to check out what's going on, and then we're going to go in. So Moses sends in Caleb and Joshua and a couple other guys. They go in. And they find out that the land of Canaan's nice. You know, it's good for farming. They bring back some fruit. They bring back some grapes. I had a picture of what it looks like. It didn't work, but basically it doesn't look like that other picture. There's like farmland, and it's green, and it's nice, and it's perfect. This is God's promises to them. But of course, we have another cycle of complaining. The land is good. It is. But the people look and they say, you know what? We were there and we saw the people who are living there. They're huge. There's no way that we could ever beat them. So, you know, it probably would have just been better if we died in Egypt. And so God again responds in anger. And we see his response to Moses on page 76. Turn to page 76, about two-thirds of the way down the page. There's a paragraph that starts with, "But the whole assembly." Halfway into that, the Lord speaks to Moses. The Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me in spite of all of the signs I performed among them?" So they're right at the doorstep. They don't trust in God, and they don't trust in his power. They don't trust in his provision. And so God makes a judgment that all of those people that came out of Egypt, yeah, none of you guys are going to be able to enter the promised land. You're going to wander the wilderness, and you're going to wander the wilderness until that generation passes away and your children will receive the gifts and promises that I have made to you. And so they go about on their way, and they travel again through the wilderness, wandering through the desert for about 40 years. And it's kind of funny. I think we have this concept in our mind that they wander like to like the far off places. They're just walking from place to place in these wilderness areas, these desert areas just south of Canaan for 40 years, just wandering. And all the while, they're still receiving all this provision from God. God's still providing food for them to eat and water for them to drink. And all the while, they continue to have this cycle of God providing, the people complaining, God getting angry and punishing them, and then they water some more. That's what this chapter is pretty much all about. And as I was reading it, I had to catch myself from chuckling a couple times. You know, you read through this section, and it's almost laughable when you see how the people of Israel respond to God's provision for them. You know, I'm like, can't you guys see what's going on here? Like, God miraculously saved you out of Egypt, and he's giving you food miraculously, and somehow you don't see what's going on. It's just crazy. Even at the end of the chapter, page 84, after all those 40 years, Moses addresses the people one last time before he dies and before Joshua leads them into the promised land finally. And Moses, in the first part of his address, kind of encapsulates what's been going on these last 40 years. So it's that small paragraph right in the middle of page 84, the last sentence. Moses says, "These 40 years, the Lord your God has been with you. And you have not lacked anything." All this time, 40 years, God has provided for his people. And all this time, 40 years, God's people have not been expecting the good things of their God. they have not been looking at God as their God. And I was pondering that. And then I realized something. How often in our lives, when God provides for us, is it not exactly the way that we would have done it? You know? Like, I really need such and such to happen. You know what would really be great is if God just dropped $500 in my lap for that. That would be awesome. God provides for their needs, and it's just enough, but it's not exactly what they wanted. And as we go through this chapter and we see this cycle that the people of Israel go through, I see a similar cycle in our lives. You know, it's never fun when you're like reading through the story and you like start identifying with like the numbskulls of the story. I don't know about you, but that's like where I'm at. I was like, dang it, every time. But as I'm reading this, I see the people of Israel and I see myself in them. Because how often in our lives do we go through a similar cycle where God provides for us, but we sure forget about it pretty quick, don't we? He provides for us, and then, things are good. So we're happy, and we go about our way, and I think because I got things under control, I'm just going to walk along my way. I don't need God anymore. And then something happens for whatever reason, and things don't pan out the way I wanted to. I took things into my own hands. I end up in this pattern of sin, and all of a sudden, I'm in this huge mess, and I need God's restoration to bring me back around. The people of Israel were in a cycle. I don't know how to really put it more plainly than this. The Christian life is a cycle. It's a cycle of us recognizing constantly the fact that we are just like them. We turn away from God. We have faults and failures, and we have to daily come to the foot of the cross. You know, as we go through the story, one of the things that we want to do is see Jesus. We want to recognize Jesus in this story. And sometimes it's super simple. The people of Israel need Jesus. The people of Israel need to recognize their God and his provision, and I need Jesus, and we all need Jesus. Chapter 6 is a story about God providing for his people, and God's people not recognizing that provision. And for us in our lives, and we recognize the Christian life is that similar cycle, we also must recognize God's provision. And when I think about God's provision, there's two things. And I bring myself straight to like the explanation of the first article of the Apostles' Creed. We said the creed together a moment ago. And when we confess those words, the first article of the Apostles' Creed, we affirm that God created the heavens and the earth. And when we do that, we are affirming that God provides for us, that he is creator and he takes care of us. But we also confess that God is the creator. And then the second part of the creed, he sends his son Jesus into the world, which provides not just our daily needs, but our spiritual needs. We have a spiritual sickness in us. And God provided for us Jesus. He came into the world and through his death and resurrection provides for us grace. He provides for us mercy to cover over all these faults and failures and things that we do. This cycle that we're in constantly comes to the fact that we need to take a sip at the altar of that grace and mercy. When we come up here and we receive the Lord's Supper, we receive the forgiveness of sins in Jesus Christ. God provides, and the cup of his grace and mercy in Jesus is overflowing. Let us recognize God's provision in our lives, in Jesus, and in our daily bodily needs. And so when we say that the first article of the Apostles' Creed, we affirm together that God made me and all creatures. He gave me my body and my soul and my eyes and ears and all my members, and he daily takes care of them. He daily and richly provides for me all the things that I need, my food, my clothing, my shoes, my house, my home, wife, children, all the things that I need to support this body and life. God daily guards and protects me against all evil and all dangers. And he does that not of any worthiness or anything that I've done in me. He does so out of fatherly, divine goodness and mercy. And so our response is to thank, praise, serve, and obey him. This is most certainly true. So that explanation to the article is my prayer for us, that we recognize that provision. We recognize Jesus in our lives. And our response is, we thank, praise, serve, and obey him with all the strength that he provides us. Amen.